Welcome to Green Coffee Connect. A lot of people are asking me, what is Green Coffee Connect? Well, Green Coffee Connect is like a space that we created with the Specialty Coffee Association to talk about different topics, to make connections, but to have conversations. We are not here, you know, as you see, there is no stage or anything. Here is like a space where we can chat, we can learn from each other. And the good stuff is that we can ask a lot of questions, you know, after we hear from our speakers. So welcome to Green Coffee Connect. You can come to drink coffee or anything. And I think there is going to be, later there's going to be coffee from the project that you can taste it, okay? So today, this conversation that is going to happen right now, so we are going to talk about a project that is together with COLSA and GMP Coffee, where coffee farmers themselves are gaining insights from the real-time monitoring of the cost of production. Especially in this year of wild fluctuation in the coffee prices, cost of production and living income is very important. So we are going to hear today from Janine. Janine is a founder and CEO of GMP Coffee. Currently, she's a SEA board member. Janine is a licensed Q grader and certified Q processor as well. She's also a coordinator of the SEA US chapter, you know, for specialty coffee. And she hosts frequent business online chats with a range of experts in the coffee industry. We are also going to hear from Leon Brody. He is the CEO of COSA, the Committee of Sustainability Assessment. Leon is a seasoned sustainable leader with experience of over 25 years creating scalable market-based solutions in food and agriculture. As a CEO of COSA, he advised global stakeholders on data-driven impact in agriculture, following leadership roles at Sustainable Harvest, Root Capital, Green Mountain Coffee Roasters, Oxfam, etc. So he has a great range of experience. And as well, we are going to hear from Gilbert Gattali. He is the executive director of AFCA. Gilbert is also mi hermano, as we call. You can see the resemblance, right? So Gilbert is currently the executive director of AFCA, Africa Fine Coffees Association. Gilbert is passionate about coffee. He's a great professional in the coffee industry for many, many years, 17. Prior to joining AFCA, Gilbert has held leadership positions in various companies, primarily focusing on specialty coffee experts from East Africa, and he's involved in several projects. And today he's here representing not only, you know, himself, but also other farmers in Africa. So thank you so much for joining us. And well, I give you the voice to Leon and Janine and Gilbert.
Afternoon, everybody. How's everybody doing? How's everybody doing? All right, you could be bad. I just wanted to make sure you could hear me. This is going to be a conversation. So if you have questions or you want to jump in at any point today, please just raise your hand, jump in, and we'll try to make sure it's conversational. This is not meant to be a stale lecture, but there are some things that we're going to put on the screen because it'll help us as reference points, but more as sort of a crutch. I'm kind of comfortable with crutches these days. Forgive me. If at some point I lose my train of thought, it's because a mixture of painkillers and a broken leg, thanks to a clumsy trip to Ethiopia a few months back. And so I'll apologize in advance if anything comes out in a language that's not mine or yours. Today we're going to be talking about cost of production. It's something that I feel like we've been chatting about since I first came to the industry back in 1999 with my friend Karen over there, who was pushing the industry forward, pioneering around sustainability when it was a topic not really known or understood. And so 25 years, 6 years later, I'm still a little frustrated that we have discussions about cost of production as if we don't know what it means. It's one of these, I was a trader for many years running Sustainable Harvest, and I remember there used to be these debates, well, what's your cost of production? As if it was a national secret. I can't tell you. Farmers don't know, they're dumb because they're farmers. Like, come on, that's ridiculous. One, I grew up as a farmer in the U.S., and no matter how resource poor you were, you had a sense of where you were losing money and where you were gaining money. It's just the day-to-day. But we didn't necessarily always have data against it. And I found it really, I'll say it honestly, disingenuous about 10 years ago when two major traders, global traders, were having a debate about whether cost of production was 126 or 131. And a big global brand said, why does that matter? Neither of you sell us coffee at that price or above. And it was like, woo, mic drop. And in that moment, people said, how come we can't standardize cost of production? How come we can't figure out whether you're in Burundi or Rwanda or Colombia, what cost of production is? Shouldn't we measure it the same way, even if it is different region to region, farm to farm, country to country? You think, yes, that's a great idea. And so under the leadership of the ICO and Venusia, about 4 years ago, 3 years ago, we started a pretty significant project trying to standardize cost of production globally with the idea that every country could use this standard and every trader, every business, every farmer could use this standard. And that was about 3 years of really significant research in two major countries, Rwanda and Mexico. And after 2 years of GIZ, German government funded work, where we used hundreds and hundreds of enumerators and we spent time with a statistically significant sample in each country, we created cost of production roadmaps for each country, but now globally. So we don't have to guess anymore how to measure cost of production. But as amazing as the German government was as a funder, we know that they funded that once, and it took about 2 years from start to finish. And we know that it cost a lot of money that none of us have to pay in the industry to assess cost of production. And so we went to our friends at the Gates Foundation and we said, you know, there's a better way, but we need resources to figure it out. And they gave us a pretty significant grant to talk about this idea of data democracy and agile data. And let me just demystify what that means first. Data democracy. I want to say that many of us are responsible for outmoded thinking in coffee. Maybe we call it colonial thinking in coffee. Thinking that I need what you have and I deserve it because, well, you give me the coffee and I pay for the coffee, so give me whatever else I ask for. If I want your picture, you should send it to me free of charge. If I want to know about your family and their names, you should send it to me free of charge. If I need to know your parcella and your GPS coordinates and your polygon, you should send it to me free of charge. If I want to know your dog's, litter of puppies, you should send it to me free of charge. It depends, because this week my barista really loves puppies and we want to tell a story that connects drinkers and farmers around a puppy. And you're like, okay, I'm not joking, because that's something a roaster once said to me. Could we do this? Could we just have a WhatsApp connection? We often extract data, we often extract information from farmers at the cost of farmers, at the cost of exporters, and not at the cost of consumers. We externalize that on others. When we extract data, a lot of the time, we take away the value of the data, which is, how do you manage your life? What does this tell you? I don't know about you, but I have this modern invention called a smartphone that tells me where I'm supposed to be minute to minute. I use it to manage my life. Now, if my wife had this phone and had to call me every 15 minutes to tell me where I had to be, that just wouldn't make sense. It's inefficient. The same thing happens every day in coffee. Data gets extracted from farmers, and it often never finds its way back to farmers. And so that's this conversation. We're trying to get away from 2 years of studies, which are awesome, that are hard to replicate, 2 years of studies that are expensive. And I don't know about you, but if you found out 2.5 years later that there is a massive issue around cost and labor and that you paid a coffee price that was below the cost of production, it would kind of be too late. So what we're trying to do is do what many of us in this world today are doing, which is moving into a real-time world, into a world where you expect Uber to come when you call it, into a world when, whether it's good or bad, you want to order something from someone, you buy it. But somehow we keep thinking that that world is only a world that exists some places. And I think that is also the outmoded thinking that we need to get beyond. We need to realize, and I won't put anyone on the spot to do ages, but we just hosted 36 kids from Argentina that were 16 years old. And there's a belief now that anybody under 20 around the world is more connected to each other than somebody in your own community might be when you bridge that generational gap. And it's really wild to see. And so one of the biggest things that I've heard is we can't deploy agile data solutions in the coffee lands because farmers don't have phones, because farmers don't have power, because farmers don't have data, because farmers don't have digital literacy. And I look, honestly, and I appreciate that people are pointing out the things that we need to remove, but when people say that, I think that's outmoded colonial thinking. Are you happy with that? Are you happy to let it stand? And then just have to be like, yeah, that's the way of the world. No, that's crap. That's not what Karen said 30 years ago when she was pushing forward this industry to be more sustainable when nobody else was. We all have to evolve. And so this conversation is about one example of how we can evolve to show you that it's here now, it's possible, and there are a lot more examples like this, and we all need to jump in. And so let me... I thought I was sitting on the clicker here. Okay. So let me go to my friends Gilbert and Janine for a second before I jump into what we're doing in Burundi, just to ask a simple question. And the question is sort of, what are we solving for? In this case, Janine specifically, you know, why did we get together and what was the issue we were trying to tackle? Because I'm a big fan of being very clear. There are a lot of problems out there, but if we don't know which problem we're solving, we don't know whether we've solved it at the end. And so I think it's really important to hear from Janine about what problem we are solving and why.
Thank you, Liam. And thanks for all of you for being here on this afternoon. I have a full room. This is really amazing. So thanks for coming and taking a moment to be with all of us this afternoon to share an important thing that we are doing in Burundi, but also that can be done throughout Africa and hopefully throughout the producing countries. But Liam and I actually met maybe about, I don't know, a year, 2 years ago. And we're just like discussing and I was just sharing with him some of the challenges that we are facing in Burundi, which is where we are sourcing coffee from right now. I am from Burundi. If some of you don't know, I'm American, but also I am from Burundi, and it's my duty to do what I'm doing in Burundi for the farmers. But one of the biggest challenges that we were starting to face were clients who would come to me and say, you know, we love your coffee. We want to really continuously supporting you, but there is one thing that's very important for us. We want to understand what is the cost of production and living income for the farmers you are buying the coffee from. And I look at them and I say, I have no idea. And they don't have any idea either. And I say, well, sorry, we can't buy coffee from you, or we can't put your coffee on a website until we have this information. So I share this with Liam and just pulling my hair and I say, you know, there's no baseline. I mean, I went everywhere to try to find all NGOs that have come to Burundi and done work in Burundi, and there is no one who has any idea. There's no baseline, right? So Liam turned out to me and said, I think I have a solution for you. We just got this grant with the, you know, Gate Foundation to do this study, but we really have done this work in other communities, but not in coffee. Would you be interested for us to do this work in Burundi? And it's going to take something like 9 months, because now it's going to be us coming in and trying to collect data on a daily basis instead of turning around and asking the farmers a year later, what did you eat for breakfast on April 21st, 2023? Right? This is a tool that we are going to be able to develop and provide the farmers an ability for them to be able to record information on a daily basis on really what does it cost them to produce what they are producing, which is coffee in this case, and then be able to reflect back to us and having that information and then be able to do something with it, but also give that information back to the farmer so the farmer can turn around and say, well, now maybe I shouldn't be using that much fertilizer. Maybe now I should be charging more money for this for my products because I spend more money into it. But above and beyond that, what actually got me really excited was the ability to actually be able to use that tool to do things like when we used to go back in the country to pay the second payment, we have to show up with just backpack full of cash that we literally have to distribute to each farmer. But now, in the future, hopefully we can use that platform to pay that distribution of second payment through the phone. Maybe we can come in and then use that tool to be able to provide their education in financial literacy for women coffee farmers, which we have also been doing, but in a more efficient and timely way. But anyway, so he said, are you interested to do this? And I'm like, yeah, let's do this. One thing I really want to share with you when we start, going after, let's do this and trying to collect even like sampling, we actually have 400 farmers in the group of all the 20,000 farmers who are behind our coffees. We had to take a sampling of farmers we're going to, random sampling of who we're going to be actually collecting the data from. Then we start realizing that when we actually provide them with the phones, they have no way to power those phones. I said, Liam, I think we have a problem. Great to have those phones, but they don't even have a way to power those phones. Then we were like, oh, we can solve that problem. Let's give them some solar panels so they can be able to not only, power the phones, but also have some electricity in their homes. And then as we go into even deeper, we're like, oh, wait a minute. Actually, there is no wireless connection. So we, when the farmers are at the windmills, there is no connection. They go in, they deliver the cherries, they're out, they go back in the homes and do what they used to do, but they have no way of downloading the data. So we're like, well, we got another problem. Do we have money for us to actually be able to provide them with some connectivity? And they were like, all right, here we go. But the reason I'm telling you all this story is if we can be able to actually collect this information, make this tool functional in place like Burundi, it will be able to be applicable anywhere in the world because, Burundi is unfortunately one of the poorest countries in the world, and it is important for us to be able to power the farmers with this information so they can be able to decide for themselves, what is my shortcut? What's going on a daily basis as we move forward? But I think we're going to get to the point where once we have this app working properly, my biggest concern actually is like how to scale this up so it can actually be able to utilize to all the farmers in Burundi, not only in coffee, maybe even in other crops, and obviously be able to utilize this tool in other countries around the world. So I can talk forever, so I think it's time for me to turn on to Gilbert for himself to give a 2 cents. So thank
you. Yeah, we'll come back to Janine in a few more minutes. That's perfect. Gilbert, some of you know, is a leader across Africa, a leader across the coffee industry globally, started from both, farming and processing and just played a role in every level of the chain. Gilbert, Burundi, is often seen as a, completely resource poor country. You don't hear a lot about, Burundi on the international scene. But is what Janine said unique to Burundi? You work across the continent. You've worked across the coffee world. Just talk a little bit about sort of access to digital tools and digitization from a farmer perspective. Has everybody else solved that problem except for Burundi?
Thanks, Liam. Thanks, Janine. And thank you all for being with us here today. So it's probably important for us to highlight that Burundi is resource rich in some of the best coffees that exist in the world. So we don't just look at the challenges that Burundi has. And so it's important for me to, at the very least, be the voice of some of the positive things that we should highlight. So fantastic coffees coming out of Burundi. And I think being in a position for all of us to be the ones to tell those stories. Is it, a Burundi challenge? I think those are challenges that Janine were highlighting. You can find them across any coffee-growing community in the world. It's not very specific to Burundi. You'll find them across the continent of Africa. You'll find them across the continent of Latin America. In Latin America and in Asia. And so, these are not issues that are out of this world. These are challenges that have existed But in the digital world that we are operating in today, when they do come up, I think some of the solutions is what we're about to talk about. So there's the digital tools that can come out, and then there are the other solutions like solar power. There's other solutions around phones that you can use that aren't necessarily smartphones. You know, so there are systems that are GPRS related, so it doesn't necessarily have to be on the internet. But once you collect the information and the data, you pick it up. Once you get, you know, so there are solutions to some of these problems. But that's a long answer to your question. No, it's not a Burundi issue. It's an issue that a lot of coffee farmers face across the world, and probably adds to the challenge that contributes to the inequality that exists within the coffee supply and value chain. And I think some of what we're about to discuss allows for bridging that gap between farmers, in this case, being on the lower end of the spectrum.
So well said, Gilbert. Especially about the inequality that is created by not having sort of those tools in place. Let's talk specifically about Burundi, because I think, one, let's be clear about what we did so everybody better understands it. And I think this is really insightful of, you know, Gilbert saying Burundi has some of the greatest, most beautiful coffees in the world. Burundians are some of the most lovely humans in the world. And yet there are all these barriers. And I think part of our point is these are barriers that can be removed. But we have to admit that they're barriers. And then we have to call each other to act to remove these barriers. And so in this case, the Gates Foundation removed the barriers. But I've often wondered why in coffee we don't have a global fund for digitization. Why don't we have a global fund for power? We're not talking about some of the infrastructure issues that keep farmers in poverty or that widen the inequality gaps. So here's how we're trying to attack this. You know, the idea was, how can we make this a real-time solution? So for any of us that want to know in the moment what's happening, good or bad, we can put our finger on the pulse and we can figure out, are we in a good spot or a bad spot? And we being JMP as the trader, we being the farmers as the primary actors in this, and we being the industry that might have questions about what's going on in any one moment with any of the coffees that, you know, folks are buying or engaged in. What we did was we wanted to make sure that, you know, we could really analyze cost between farmers in a comparative way. And so we used the ICO comparative benchmarks that we created, and we made sure that we could drill them down into this app. As Janine was saying, because we had the Gates Foundation together, we were able to just figure out what the major barriers were and eliminate them. But eliminating the barriers hasn't been necessarily easy. But we did provide smartphones, solar power, and satellite access to every farmer that was working on this project. Part of that's the incentive, but part of that is not expecting farmers to do without and still be judged, comparatively. And the idea was, focusing on these 400 farmers, that we would track them throughout the season, throughout the harvest. And we'd make sure afterwards we would compare the research and the data to the sample in Mexico and to the sample in Rwanda to make sure that we have comparability and validation. So we're verifying that. And right now that looks on track. And here's what we usually think about. When many of us collect data, and I suspect we've all touched data in some way, shape, or form in coffee, it's often slow, it's often inaccurate, it's often expensive, response rates are low, and like I said, it's extractive in one way. It's let me have your data, not a conversation. So this term agility is one that you hear in technology a lot, and we want to bring into coffee more, that we're looking for ways that make this data and our understanding of it faster, frequent, low cost, and democratizing it so it's not an afterthought. Oh, wait a minute, maybe we should share this back with the farmers. No, maybe they should share it with us and it should start with them. And so what we did was we worked with Janine and the farmers and co-designed an app for the farmers that was farmer-centric. The app works offline. The app works in a visual way. We're layering in verbal for those that don't read. We're layering in lots of local language capacity. There's lots of work that we have in our roadmap. But what we did was we designed this from a farmer point of view, and we still have learning there, but so far, so good. And each day, as Janine was saying, farmers are reporting when there's time or money spent. And so it's fresh. It makes sense. And each day, they're starting to get some of that information back, just like if you use something to budget with. For those of you who use QuickBooks, you might start to see information back. Those of you who use things like, TurboTax for your taxes, you get information back. And this is a really important thing to talk about, because in this industry, we've tend to said, if a farmer reports information, how would I trust it? It's not real. It's self-reported. Dangerous. You're like, come on. That's because you might not be incentivizing them in the right way. Of course, I'm not going to put good data in if it doesn't benefit me. So you turn this on its head. Anybody ever use a digital tax service? You don't put bad things into that because you want to make sure you get the best return and you don't want to get in trouble. What about digital budgeting for yourself? Has anyone done digital budgeting? You don't put bad numbers in because it doesn't help you. That's the concept here. You get away from bad data because it's all about helping the farmer, and the farmer is motivated by that. And we've understood now that that actually correlates and holds. And so that incentive in itself, how you design this, really matters. If we design first and foremost with the farmer in mind, the incentive is baked in. We don't often think about that, and I'd like us to more, because then the question is, well, what does this data do for me? Does this data get me access to finance? Does this data get me access to markets? Does this data help me increase my profitability because I better manage my farm and my operations? And so ultimately, this is the research that we're doing. We'll publish research after this is done. And we've been publishing research for the last 3 years on lots of different use cases. We've looked at agile data with poultry in Zimbabwe. We've looked at agile data in Malawi with fertilizer, non-chemical fertilizers. We've looked at agile data in EUDR and whether you can trust as a smallholder remote sensing. We're doing all kinds of publishable studies to look at agile data in different contexts, in different countries, in different industries. And so this is a big opportunity for coffee. I should say, especially because the Gates Foundation doesn't fund coffee anymore, and they are giving us a chance to sort of stretch a little bit because they're focused on agility and how they can learn about other farmers in Burundi or other places. And so again, the three measures that matter to the Gates Foundation and that we use as sort of an example of what we mean when we talk about agility and data are time, cost, and validity. Can you move from post-harvest to real-time? Can you move from high cost to low cost or at least manageable cost? I don't know about you, but I used to spend so much time and money collecting data that I had no time and money to address issues that I found from the data. And I hear that time and time again from lots of folks in the chain. We know what the problem is. We have data, but we can't do anything about it now. So how do we not rob ourselves of the resources we need to address the problems? And how do we make sure that this stuff is valid, which is really key? So let me give you a chance to play, because I want to demystify data collection in a way that might be clear to you. But if not, what I'd like you to do is take out your phone, and I can't guarantee that your phone settings will work on all of this, but we have three different apps here. You could do a voice bot, which might not work well here because of the noise. You could do an app, which will run online, and you could do a WhatsApp. So try it out right now and just see. And Right now, there's a dashboard behind it that you can't see, but the dashboard is empty. And in a moment, once we move from this slide, I'm going to show you the dash. So we'll give you one more moment to try, and you might have to try a couple of these. For my iPhone, I can never get the voice bot to work, but I'm able to get the other two to work fairly easily. We'll give you one more minute to scan your... Does anybody need more time to scan? You can still work on adding the information. Okay, we're going to... It's amazing. The data turned into a dog. I don't know what that is, but I like it. So here's what I want to show you. This dashboard is live real time. So we're going to refresh the dashboard and we're going to see what we're learning. And maybe scroll down a little bit. So you're starting to see this dash come alive. This is real time. Real time. This is your data. Collected in an instant, very simply. And Ning, are you? I know you guys are jumping behind between different things, and it's a little hard. But if you're able to scroll down, we could start to see where folks are from. Now, I don't believe that we do not have any Africans with us today. And so I bet if we refreshed, we might all of a sudden jump up and either see that. Oh, look at that. All right, we're getting there. I thought this was like a new executive order that barred data from Africa. Sorry, I'm trying to laugh right now and not cry. All right. So here's the point. All the questions that we were asking you are in this dash if we scrolled around. These questions are fairly irrelevant, but we do ask these questions of farmers regularly. The point is this. In about 3 minutes, I collected primary data from everyone that submitted it. How long does it take you to collect primary data from a farmer cooperative? Who's got an idea? Conversation time. Can you do it in 5 minutes to collect primary data? 6 months, I heard an hour. I could tell you in Rwanda when we had enumerators sit with a farmer, they sat for an hour and a half each interviewing to get data. Now, they got all the cost of production data, not just primary data. Ooh, look at that. Now you have it. Technology proficiency. Oh, you got a lot of folks that are fairly proficient in here. We asked about professions and the demographics. What crop do you work with? We've got a lot of people that work with coffee and a couple with cocoa in here, which is interesting. So my point is this. I could do a calculation for you and just show you something. We were able to get about, let's call it 50 people in here in about 3 minutes, all of this data in. Now, if I multiplied that by a supply chain, when I was at Sustainable Harvest, we worked with 100,000 farmers. So if I multiplied that out, I could figure out how long it would take me to get 100,000 farmers' data and what it would cost me. I could model that out for you right now. And I can compare that to any counterfactual. 1 hour, 6 months, or 1 year. And the obvious point is this. If you use this tool right now today, you save yourself time and money. And you might all want to use this tool for something different. I don't know. Hey, what's the weather like? Are you seeing flowering? Are things stable? How are tariffs affecting you? There are 1,000 things we might want to start having our finger on the pulse. And when I say that, I mean in every direction. There are a lot of people that want to have information. You often hear farmers talk about how they have no idea who buys their coffee. They often, have farmers, talk about they have no idea what consumers think of their coffee. And so this is a way that we can start to create connectivity in real time. And I just want to show you that for all this talk about digitization, it's real, it happens. It's actually a lot more simple than we make it. And now we can redeploy this on anything. You want to ask about gender, you want to ask about coffee quality, you want to ask about fill in the blank. What do you want to ask? What would you ask someone if you had the choice that you needed consistent data for? Olga.
If they are happy with the life, you know, being coffee farmers.
Yeah, sure. That's an awesome qualitative question. Are you happy in your life as a farmer? Some of you might know Pablo Ramirez. When he was at Starbucks years ago, he was doing some work with Grameen, and Grameen says there's a direct correlation between a farmer that said that they saw a future in farming. And so they started asking, do you see a future? And they realized every farmer that said yes was a good bet, and every farmer that said no was a bad bet. Data pulsing that you can get easy. So what I'd like to do is just now pivot to hearing a little bit about the farmers who are engaged in the project. Because I was really worried. I'm a dad with four kids, and I've got three of them that are teenagers, and I've seen what social media and smartphones have done to rob them of their brains and faculty. It's influenced our culture a little bit in ways that I'm not in love with. So my fear was, we're going to do this to Burundi. And I think it's useful to hear from farmers. We were hoping to have farmers with us today. I want to thank Olga, who was making it possible to bring farmers. But my country wasn't making it possible to bring farmers. And so I want to let you know that bringing farmers was at the center of this conversation. It just wasn't possible because of politics. That said, we're going to show the video, and you're going to hear what farmers were thinking. When was this, Janine? Back in September, August? So this was at the beginning of pre-harvest, and people were asking this question, how do you feel? What do you think?
And hopefully we can get you audio.
Uses it, and does it agile data? What is it? Who is it for? How is it used? Who actually uses it? And does it help the person it should, the farmer?
We decided to develop an app that would maintain the closer rigor in data collection. So our first challenge was to simplify the survey in a way that would maintain the validity of the data. Our next step was to work with the developer to simplify the content in a way that it could be understandable by the farmers, who in many cases don't know how to use this kind of technology to input data. We also had to think about if the farmers had access to smartphones, if they had power in their households, and if in the country there was network connectivity so they could be sending this data on a daily basis.
Well, during COSAS, we discussed the introduction and development of an agile data app specifically for farmers. Look, there's no point in talking about any type of app without hearing from the end users themselves to hear their point of view. Of course, I'm talking about farmers and their communities.
Inyigisho bahejeje kuduha ni inyigisho nziza zadushimishije kandi twabonye ko ari inyigisho zoroshye. Gukoresha ubwo buhinga bizotugirira kamaro kuko umurimyi azotegerezwa kubona ubuhombe yagize cyangwa inyungu yagize ku bikorwa azaba yakoreye mu gipimo cyiwe. Bo nk'intambamyi twabonyemo nizijyanye n'ukuntu ibirere bitari bimeze neza naho ibindi byose twabonye bimeze neza.
Tubishana abanye bizodufasha kumenya uko tuzotegura igitego cyacu cy'ikawa kandi tumenye ko twahora dukorera mu buhombe ubu tugiye kumenya ko tugiye gukorera tumenya ko twumbuka. Oya nta ntambamyi zihari. Icyo tubera intambamyi ni uko ubumenyi bwoba buke. Ubwo bumenyi bubaye bwinshi gishobora kugenda neza.
Yego biroroshe kuko turiko turabyitegereza kubera n'ibi ntabyo twari tuzi ariko twitegereje ukungene muriko murabiduha turumva mu mitima y'uko birimo. tuzofata umwanya wo gukomeza tubyiga kuko ntiwakwiga rimwe ngo tutahura
cyo bintu cyo bizadufasha ubwa mbere twavuma dukora tutavitse ukunkunka cyangwa duhoma yuko mbatu tunguka nka twamenya ariko kweza uno musi mwaduha nyigisho y'ukuntu tuzazabigenza duharure ite twakoresheje twanga turaba n'imyimbo twakwemwo mu gihe tugacekaho.
Farmers and their communities love the idea of Agile Data App. It's a work in progress, of course, where the initial feedback is incredibly positive. And we'll be following this closely over the next year to see if farmers' expectations are being met, despite some of the challenges that even they have highlighted. Agile Data.
My family says Agile Data because they've heard me play that so many times at home. It's really interesting, and I want to turn this over to Janine to talk more about the experience on the ground. But what I'm really just trying to suggest is that there is a world of possibility here now that can solve problems we thought were unsolvable, and they're actually a lot more affordable than we realize.
Will this app be available for anyone, and when, and what's the cost, that type of thing?
So it's a great question. The question was, is the app available to anyone, and at cost, and at what cost? I want to come back to that, if we can pause on it, because I think that's an important part of our conversation, and honestly, I want to get your perspective on that more. This is a little bit of a design question for us at this point that I would love input from this community on. So we'll come back to that in just a minute, John. Please.
Janine, it started by you saying it was your buyers who were asking you if you could provide this information. Does it become a factor in terms of the pricing you get, that the fact that you can give them that information? And if you could speak about how eventually it's something, yes, they may know that they're working at a loss or a profit, but how does it all relate to them getting a little bit more money by undergoing through this process?
Thank you. Actually, that's an excellent question. And that's really, that's the bottom line. If I know it's costing you, let's say, $4 to produce your coffee, but you're only selling your coffee, let's say, at $3, I don't want you to be losing money. Because if you're losing money today, producing that coffee at $4 and I'm buying it at $3, that means it's not sustainable. I'm not going to be able to come back and buy coffee from you tomorrow. Like most of the stuff that are happening in developing countries, places like even like Burundi, even in other maybe countries where they produce coffee, farmers lose interest about making coffee because they don't see any profit into it. So the idea here is if we can arm the clients with the information they are requiring, they don't want to have the information so they can just put on the website and say, this is the cost of production for the farmers I'm buying coffee from. But this is also to educate them and then come back and say, you know what? We're not paying enough for this. Actually, we should just be paying more. I have some clients who just say, you know, I want to pay at least 20% because I'm making, I don't know, 20% on the back end when I sell the coffee. But if I can get that information, it's going to give me more power to actually, you know, pay for the right price for the coffee. So I think it's a good incentive because those clients have an interest to really know because they want to make a difference, not just for the fact about just like knowing what is the cost, you know, the cost of making that, you know, that coffee for them. So did that answer your question? Yeah. And question anyone else? I think this is, like Liam said, you know, it's an open platform for anyone to ask. We are learning with this. I'm learning tremendously in terms of like the time and energy it actually takes for us to develop this app and get involved in this app. But I am a visionary. I see potential in this app in terms of like what we can do for the farmers and also what the farmers can learn from this. But if you ask questions, because I think this is the time to ask questions. So the platform is yours, unless Liam wants me to address anything.
A coffee entrepreneur in Rwanda about the digital platform and why they don't make their payments using the digital payment digital platform. And one of the things was that they are unwilling to pay the charges of the phone company because in their mind, they're already not making so much. So any additional cost is not something that they're willing to bear, even if they would like to receive their money using mobile money. And it becomes a significant cost to the coffee washing station because if the mobile company then charges quite a significant amount, while it's sustainable in other industries, as we all know, in a country like Kenya, everything is mobile money. But for the farmer, it seems like to me we are depending on the goodwill of the buyer that they might pay you a little bit more if you do certain things. And we're putting the onus back on the farmer. You do this, you do that, and then we will consider paying you a little bit more. And I'm wondering whether this can be a little evened out, that if you do certain things and you bear the cost, because at the end of the whole thing of COSA is to unburden the farmer.
Yes.
In this case, we are starting again from the farmer, not from the buyer. We're saying, you farmer, do X, Y, Z, then we'll get back to you about whether we can pay you a little bit more. While it's, yes, it's a good thing for the farmer to be able to get $4 as opposed to $3. Many times they're willing to take $3, meaning they are undervalue their labor and things like that, because that may be the only cash part of the economy of their year. So I'm wondering, how do you connect it so that the actual end buyer is as committed to this process as you wish to have the farmer?
Very good question. And I think some of this we are going to uncover as we get close to this, to the work. I can tell you, for example, like in places like Burundi, I used to even ask the farmers, and I said, we come back and give you the second payment, but I don't want to just be coming back with just, backpacks of cash, because I can be killed on my way there, or I can be stopped. Can we just pay you, through the mobile, app? And some of the farmers actually didn't even have accounts, for example. We find out, you can do it for some of them, but some of them don't even have a bank account. And some of them don't have a bank account for the same reason you just mentioned, because the bank charged them too much money for them just to hold a simple, checking account, right? So, but I think as we go through this journey, we are going to uncover for sure some of the challenges, kind of like when we went in and we find out, great, give them cell phones so they can collect, we can collect data and they can have all this information, but they don't have any solar power, right? Or they don't have any internet capability, for example. But another story I'm going to tell you on top of this, in the same community, when we're giving the solar panel for free, one of the wetland manager actually, she said, no, you're doing this wrong. I'm actually going to provide solar panels to all my community, not only just the 400 you selected from the groups, all of them, but they're going to pay back for this. So he's actually giving them the solar panel as a loan. Then again, the whole idea here, we want to empower them. We don't want them to continuously depending on just like the handout. And I love that idea that he actually came up from this. It's like the creativity. He's like, let's make sure that I give all of the other farmers the same ability to be able to plug the phone, to have electricity at home, but I'm going to loan them the solar power. So they are now, they all have the solar power in that one community that we work with, but the farmers, they are owning, they have ownership in this. And I think at the end of the day, things are going to come up. You don't know what's going to come up, but it's how you address them.
Maybe I can speak a little bit to that. I think a number of things. You speak of the onus being pushed back to the farmer. Listen, the truth is, and the reality is, the coffee chain is a bit messed up, that all of it tends to always go down to the farmer. And that's just our reality. Not that we should accept it or not do something about it. That is the reality. And I think an app like this or a technology like this actually provides this space to provide information which becomes knowledge, which gives the tools to the farmers now to have the power to be able to say, this is valid information about what my cost is, about what it is. And then you can start to use that as the tool to negotiate better. And I think, you know, if you look at anytime you're able to provide a space, an opportunity for farmers, if you look at cupping, for example, when people were able to start to understand the value of your coffee because you're cupping your own coffee, it puts you in a much better position to actually negotiate because you know the value of your coffee. For a long time, farmers were just producing coffee and selling it, and they didn't know what the quality of that coffee was, so the buyer determined what that quality and what that price was. So I think with something like this, it starts to give a farmer the information that they need, which is the knowledge that now becomes the power to start negotiating properly. And so I think the onus, while it starts now from the farmer, hopefully if we do it right, it pushes it back to be able to say, you know what? No, I'm not going to sell it for $3 a pound because my cost of production is this. Or a farmer decides, you know what? I'm probably better off selling something else and not coffee. And that's just the reality of that. So I think that's important to take into account. And if you talk about the mobile money penetration in certain places, Kenya is a fantastic example, right? It's penetrated significantly. But you'll have countries that will be a little bit slower in understanding that. But there's also an opportunity there because if it's a numbers game. And so once there is enough momentum, then the telephone companies or providers, service providers will start saying, ah, maybe there's a way here that maybe we reduce this amount because there's enough of a group of people who actually want this service. And I think it's really time. It's where it's going to happen. For me, I think what's more important is to be able to do this in a way that the farmers are on the driver's seat. Because when you say the onus is being put on the farmers, yes, it's more worrying when now this development happens and the farmers actually don't own their data, because data in itself has value. And so I think for me, that's really where some of this work needs to, and I think it's being touched upon here, is who owns this data? Can they utilize, do they fully own that data? Because you spoke to it earlier, Liam, is for so long, I mean, I've been selling coffee for 20 years, and you know, a micro lot buyer buying 20 bags of coffee is probably asking you so many questions only to reject the coffee. so really, it's, you put in all this time, this energy, and so in this case, if we're going to ask farmers for this information, which is really pertinent, important information, do they own that information? Can they monetize that information when the time comes and they need to? Should they? So I think those are some of the things that if we do it right with the right partners, then we're actually allowing the dignity that the farmers and the owners of the information that they have, for it to have real value, because it means nothing if it doesn't add value to a farmer, to a group of, a co-op or an export group. So I think value becomes extremely important, and how they take that and they use that is really what's key, because it starts with respecting and appreciating the farmer.
I really love what Gilbert just said, and I feel similar. Having worked in the space with you for so long, and know I've fought all my life in this industry to get farmers better prices and for farmers to be treated with dignity and respect. But I do believe, as somebody that has financed farmers and co-ops, farms are businesses. And businesses need to be run like businesses. And so my thought is, when I learned to manage a farm, when I was at Cornell, a university in the U.S. that does training for folks in agriculture, I learned to manage a farm like a business. I always learned that I may never be able to influence the buyers in the industry, but I could influence the way I did business. And that's, for some reason, not something we embrace enough about coffee. We still make coffee farmers seem like they are not actors in their own destiny and not capable, and that the only solution is price. Price is a huge solution, but if a farmer isn't managing their farm like a business, then prices can be high, and that could still not be helpful, as we hear now, when there's some inefficiency. And part of this app is really to help farmers have a conversation with each other And so one of the comparison points are things like, oh, listen, your yields are X, your neighbor's yields are Y, your application of fertilizer is X, but your neighbor's are Y. You might want to consider that you are over-fertilizing and that has a cost implication for you and it's not doing anything from a yield perspective. That little calibration, I think from a farmer to learn from each other, to have comparability at the local level, can be really important. And it's what in many, I would say, markets like the United States, having grown up in dairy, that's exactly what dairy farmers do. They're always benchmarking against one another. They're always, oh, you have robots to milk now? Well, help me understand the price point. Help me understand how long it took you to get there. And that's not simple. And so I do think this is a both and. We have to keep pushing on all of us in this room that buy coffee to pay prices that are fair, just, and equitable. And I think we have to go beyond that. A big part of this is actually moving towards living income and a belief that we're trying to figure out, and we're not here yet, but we know that Apple and Google and Meta take our data, bundle it, and sell it, right? They create a lot of value. But somehow we haven't unpacked this in coffee or in agriculture to say that the data actually has value and farmers should get paid for their data. So I do believe that there's a place where data can be used and brokered by cooperatives and others in new ways that we're not thinking about. That's different, but I do think there's something there for us to explore. That could be one of the many things that begins to close the income gap, just like quality, just like good ag practices. So it's a consideration. It's not there yet, just like mobile money in every place isn't there yet. And I do think we have to look at the regulatory environment, because in some places it's not favorable for anyone. We also have to look at reality. And in the industry, I always feel like we're sort of looking in the rear view mirror and trying to drive the car. Instead, we should be looking and looking at what mobile money penetration is projected to be today and in 5 years in key countries to see like when is the right place, because we don't want to be too early, but we don't want to be too late. And so what's the right timing where all of this stuff starts to sequence? And part of this was, you know, about cell phones. We kept hearing from folks, farmers never, you know, have smartphones, let alone just a flip phone or something else. And we actually said, yeah, that's just not true anymore. You're anchoring on bad data and you're not looking at what the information is telling us. The reality is, do you know what the percentage of smartphone penetration in Africa is today? Just yell at a number if you think you got an idea.
50%.
50%. Who? Hands up. 50% or higher? 50% or lower? It's higher. It's about 65%. Asterisk. In rural areas, it's about 35%. What's it projected to be in 5 years?
90.
About 85 to 90%. So if you are not preparing now for the 5 years that are coming, just like if we're not preparing for the climate 5 years that are coming, we're fools. We are flying blind into a storm. We must start investing in this stuff now, because those that don't, you don't get to play later, just so you know. You don't get finance later. You don't get anything later. This world is coming whether we like it or not. We all see it, smell it, sense it every day. Why do we keep dragging our feet and not investing in bringing our world along? It's not because we are Quakers. It's not because we are Amish. It's not because we are anti-technology. It's because other things that I think we really need to unpack and soul search around. We have a kind of a perspective from farmers of how this has been working when you fast forward 8 months into the project, and I think Ning's going to show that now. We asked farmers last week that we're going to come here and hang this week. You can't come to the U.S., but what would you share with you all about what they think?
Ashora, Tama to Gahem Gamugawa, the two men called Kung Sangatwa homes. Gawari Mugamberich and Oshimi, or to Tangamakuru, used by Kore Seje, who led to get together Kumanya Ugusho, Rikawa, young the Travi Uko, Tung the Chatwa homes. Ugambe and I'm not coming in before he goes to Tatuichovo. I call you Oni Kumus Kumunsi, you to get called to Tawachi cow, to a Tangarapor. To show yet, what I'm sure, not to stand up for you to show a coving gun. Here go, wait to indeed you call.
Mugabo ya nyimba tugiye tukabagara tubagaye tu je n'umugabo wanje n'abakozi batatu dushatwa nchanegera umuntu akamfasha kubera ntagira amahirwe yo kujya ku ishuri akantangira raporo hanyuma nkazamenya nanje uburyo turiko turakoresha ego byarahindutse rwose n'ubwa mbere urumva je mu kwinjira mu nzu namurikisha ibyatsi mugabo ubuya ninjira mu nzu hari amatara kandi abana banje nabo bakaba baransinkira bateramira ko babara baga telefone n'umuntu nyene wiwacu atanyegere yafise telefone nini nkamuramutsa nyene tukaganira aya matara nyene baduhe hano ku izina nyene baduhana neza telefone afashe ku iyi telefone tuze turonka aho dushyariza kugira turonka uburyo bwo gutanga raporo tutiriwe turaja kure ngo baze dutware cyo nuko numva nezerewe pe numva ko cyumvira cy'iwanje numva bokongereza inyigisho kugira nanje ndabitahure nyene neza nze nitangira nyene raporo nyene neza
jewe ntugwa muno mugambi jewe nabitowe mu mbere menga ni nk'umugenzo sinari nzi yuko bizongirira akamaro kugira ngo ndonke telefone nanjye nze ndanyereza nk'abandi ndabishimiwe cyane kandi jewe nitoza mu mugambi naje ngaha nyene ku izina nje guhembwa nute udufaranga tukabare nashoye burya mbona nyine aba ariko barandika nanjye ndiyandikisha jewe cyane nkitangira gutanga amakuru nabura nyine ntanga amakuru neza hariho ntuzenya umukuru wacu w'umugwi nyine twari dufise twaramwitura cyane akabituberamo ibyo tutazi akabidukorera akatwereka ingene tubigenza tugakorera ikawa tugatanga raporo tukabagara tugasasira tukatanga raporo tukahuza tukabona mwenga birahuje burya rero niho rero nagize gutya rero nk'ubu numva ngo abandi ngo bagomba ngo baronke ngo akavu mugabo jewe mu rutonde rw'abaronka umwavu sinashoboye kubamo ye nibaza nk'ikintu cyerekeye nk'amamega jewe mfatiye kuntuzenya kuva ko kituzana bino bikoresho byo guhuriza ngaha ibintu by'amamega nahura ndayagura ubwa mbere mugabo sinasubire kugura amamega naciye nitwararika ibi byahanyine ati nkeka ari raporo igenda neza mugabo nibaza yuko raporo itashika neza nk'uko bisabwa ico kokwa nasaba mwongere mutwongere ubwenge nyene muduha utunyigisho tushishikare turonka utunyigisho kugira natwe ngo ubumenyi natwe twiyongere natwe turabe ukuntu byogenda turabe aho twokosora icyo tuma natwe tutabaye mwabo bandi
mbone kuvuga je ndevye mu ntango ko niyumva nabona naje ubwanje ntazobishobora ubwo ngerageje kureba ukuntu bagiye batugwiriza inyigisho bakatwigisha bakadutahuza ubu mbona neza bimeze neza biratahuritse icyo twobandanya dusaba ni babandanye batwigisha ubundi bumenyi kuri iyi application ya koza kugira tubandanye tumenye ibindi murakoze mbo akamaro ni karekare tudafashe nk'iminsi nk'itandatu kugira tubidondore ntitwobimara akamaro je novuga kuri jewe ni karekare cyane kuvuga tugerageje kureba nk'ubu twahora dukora ibikorwa by'ikawa tukabura ukuntu tubisigura ariko ubu turaronka aho dutanga raporo tukavuga ibyo twakoze tukavuga n'uburyo byadutwaye nk'ubu rero akamaro ka mbere tumaze kubona baraduhaye telefone n'ubu bahagije kutwemera ko bazoduha bagombe baduha kavu ko gufumbira ibyo biterwa by'ikawa kugira bibandanye bimera neza jewe si umunezero gusa iyo biba bikunda no kubyinana ubyina kuko numva umunezero cyane kuba nararonkejwe telefone nk'umurimyi w'ikawa nkaba ngiye no guhabwa kavu ko gufumbira ibyo biterwa by'ikawa ubu ngiye kuva hasi nkore igitego cy'ikawa nivuye inyuma.
So I think that gives you a sense that it's not simple. The accompaniment has been pretty significant. There is an organization that we didn't mention earlier, thanks to Janine, that Janine brought in called Oxfean. And Oxfean is local in Burundi and really helps on digital literacy. And so there's a partner on all of these fronts. There's a partner on the solar front. There's a partner on the phone front, a partner on the coffee front, to make sure that it's not just hand a piece of technology and hope for the best. What questions do you have at this point as we come to towards John's question about what does this cost? How do we deploy it? How do we scale it? Where does this go from here?
Yeah, thank you very much, Liam. Janine, I want to give a little bit of a producer perspective. Come from Nicaragua, and I'm a coffee producer, but also I work with the government in the agriculture ministry, but also in the competitiveness program. So I don't like to talk much about fair prices. I'd rather talk about competitive prices, because as you mentioned, at the end of the game, producers are business people. And the first thing that comes to my mind is the cost of production for producers, but also the cost of production for roasters. I think there should be transparency in the whole map, in the whole system of the coffee. And first time I came to SCA was 1996, almost 30 years ago. So I do recall in 2001, when the coffee crisis, the price of coffee was 50 cents and the cost of production was 80 cents. And then in 2014, almost 12, 13 years later, we had the children migration crisis into the United States. And after the data was collected, most of those children and families were coming from coffee regions in Central America. And at that moment, the price of coffee was $1.25. So if we paid $2 back then, it was very profitable for the people to stay and live in their places. So I love the idea that we're talking about it in the industry, from a private sector and industry point of view, to come out with a solution. Because yes, there have been different solutions, direct trade, there have been fixed price situations, so that we don't have to look at the New York price, at the volatility, managing the price. But more, my question is more in line with how much is the app gonna cost, but more of the framework. Who are the traders? Who are the buyers? What is the industry that is gonna support the system? And I guess at the end is what you said. What is the incentive for the producer to input all of this data, no? Thank you.
Thanks, Roberto. It's great questions and great points. And honestly, I would love to hear more. I think we're at a choice point now, both as COSA and the project, because this was developed with public good money. We intend for it to remain public good, and we're trying to figure out how that gets into the hands of many of you. And so next phase of this project, actually today, we kick off this app does cost of production and actual income for farmers. We are now adding in all the way to living income, and we're testing it in cocoa in Cote d'Ivoire. We're kicking that off today. And so some of you know Sylvia Kalfat, who was in the video. She's actually, you know, kicking things off there today. We're doing that with some of you know our friends at Recolto, because they've been important in the industry. They're working with us there. We're also partnering with a major trader that I can't disclose right now to test this in Colombia and in India. So within, I'd say the close of this year, this will be in French, English, Swahili, and Spanish, and Hindi. We're looking at sort of how do we make this more deployable. We're having conversations with friends at the ICO and others to ask ourselves, should this just become open sourced? Can we actually donate this to the industry? Is this something the industry would use and make available to anyone that wants to use it? Now, we know that when technology is open sourced, it does not mean that it is free. So we need partners that would help in that path. And so we're having those conversations with the Gates Foundation and others about, frankly, what's the trajectory here? Because I think there's an interesting opportunity. Some of you know that the International Coffee Organization has been really looking at sector transformation for the last couple of years, and what types of initiatives can really transform the sector in a meaningful way. EUDR was a big focus for the last couple of years. Income has been also a focus that will remain and continue. My hope is that we start to think about what infrastructure is needed in coffee that doesn't exist today. So, do we have an infrastructure fund? Do we have a fund to equip farmers with smartphones? Do we have an infrastructure fund to address power and data? I think that's an important question that we need to ask ourselves. And anybody can create a fund, right? A couple of roasters working together can create a fund to deal with how you can equip farmers that you work with. A cooperative can create a fund and ask folks to populate it. So there are lots of ways. This doesn't have to happen at the globe scale, and we don't have to wait for that to occur. I think the other thing that we need to do is ask ourselves, are there people that are willing to pay? Because, yes, we need funders that come from the development sector, but we need roasters and traders to actually pay for these tools as well. And so we're thinking about programs where we could sell or license a tool like this to a roaster, but only with the guaranteed usage of farmers for free, and saying that this is all about equipping farmers with access to this for equality, and what's that path. There's another tool, another approach where perhaps we actually make this available at a very small price point for anyone to use, and we're trying to model out what would need to be true about the economics for that to be the case. I should say, not because I'm trying to sell anyone on services, but COSA on a daily basis advises companies and governments and producer organizations and civil society on what to measure and what the standards are and what the indicators are, and how to think about that. We also have technology to do RCTs, randomized control trials, or impact studies. And we're doing some work with Treehouse Foods right now, finishing up a multi-year impact study in Brazil. We do sort of compliance and validation work. We do pulse work. So there are ways that if you're interested in working on this, not to sell COSA services, but to say there are ways not to wait for this to be perfect and done, to engage further. And that's why we've been entertaining new ways with, you know, other friends in the industry to scale this. I'd love to hear actually from Gilbert and Janine on this, because I think this question is really important. And it's one that Gilbert and I have talked about in terms of what role AFCA could play as a regional, as a Pan-African organization in opening up capacity for farmers. It's something that Janine and I are talking about now. Like, where do we go with this? What happens after this cycle that we committed to? You know, this is a question that, as a commercial, you know, buyer, Janine has to ask herself, what am I willing to put in if Gates isn't there next? And so the value proposition piece is really front of mind right now. And I'd like to turn it open to any of you to help guide our thinking. It would really mean a lot for us to go back and get some kind of finger on the pulse of, actually, we would support a national or a global fund, or we would start deploying this right now if we had the opportunity. Janine, and then to Gilbert, and then would really like to hear from others too.
So thank you. Thank you for that question. I think there's still a lot of unknown, if I might call it that way. I'm very conscious of the fact that this is a risk for us to actually be like a pilot project, if I might call it, because there's nothing that would hurt me like if this doesn't go further. But my hope is this is going to go further, and I'm confident it's going to go further because we started because we had roaster clients who came to us and said, we need to understand this. We need to know this number. So a roaster who have that number is going to give them more power to also do more and go back to the consumer and said, this is the reality of the ground. This is what's going on. And we have so many clients as well who always are looking at, where can I participate? What project are you up to? I mean, we have so many projects. If you want, you can actually stop at our booth. We're on the Roaster Village 28. And there is it seems like there's unending projects we're always undertaking, you know, from this, you know, very specific one, you know, the cost of production living income study to, teaching the youth in Burundi about coffee to, I can't even just stop thinking, but they're just like, we have so many things going on, but please stop by and also have some great coffee. Like you just had, you know, from Burundi. But really the key here is how can we leverage? Because for me, I'm always going into this is we can give you great coffee, but what else can you do? Because, you know, in our case, coffee is a small part of the farmer's life. It's just a very small window because we have one harvest and that's it. But the potential with that harvest is humongous because we know the quality of the coffee. We know the value of the coffee. The farmers might not know, but this is an opportunity to actually give them that chance to know the value, but also to give that information back to the roaster to actually realize, you know, how much work that goes into it. What does it cost? Not only just labor work, but really what does it cost? And then where can we make a difference? So I think it's an opportunity, really, in my point of view, not just only for Burundi, but really for the whole entire world where coffee is being produced for us as industry, for us as the value chain, for us as importer, exporters and producers, and as well as roaster, to have a place when we're now arming the farmers with this very powerful tool that can give them so many answers. Now, it's a two-way street then again, right? When now farmers know what to do. For me personally, actually what I'm looking for is efficiency. Where now can I go back to my farmers and tell them, like, no, stop asking me for advancement every single year, or stop asking me for more money for every single year, because right here you're not efficient, because your next door neighbor is able to produce more coffee at a cheaper price, but you're not. Why not? Can we fix that problem? Can we come back and actually give you tools to fix it? And if I can come back and give you tools to actually teach you how to make your production even more efficient, and then you're not doing it, then I'm not going to be buying from you tomorrow. It's very simple. So I think it's an opportunity really to do more at every single level. Thank you for the question.
Gilbert, where do you want to see this go? Where you know, as one of the most significant leaders in the African coffee industry, where do you think we bring this to serve farmers best?
You know, so for us, I think I said it earlier, as long as it's adding value, I think that's what we want to push this needle to a point where it makes sense for you, the farmer that's going to use this app, because it's informing you about your business and it's allowing you to make a business decision. And I think if we can at the very least achieve that on this end of the chain, I think that's a fantastic way to at least look at it. And I think you mentioned something that I think is very important. How does that translate to on the buyer's side? You know, the transparency has to go both ways. I shouldn't always be the one to talk about what my cost of production and not have to ask you what your cost. I mean, it's my coffee. Who cares what my cost of production is? My price is what you should pay me. And if you want to engage on the cost of production, what's your cost of production? So that we can start leveling the play field to say, okay, now let's compare so that we can agree on a price that we think works for both of us, because you have a margin that you're trying to achieve and I have a margin that I'm trying to achieve. And so if we're not taking it to that, then there's no need for us to talk about what the cost of production is, unless that's just for me as a business owner, in this case, be it a farmer, a washing station, an exporter, to allow you to make a decision. So where do I think we should take this? I think the more we're able to find ways to make this efficient, make this be something that is a tool that standardizes and allows us to really get the right conversation going, because it's a tool to allow us to have a conversation towards a transaction that is equitable amongst ourselves as two partners. And I think if we can get there, then that's great. And I also think, really, you look at EUDR, you know, the world is moving towards traceability, transparency. It's just, how are you not going to, I mean, you just almost cannot operate moving forward if you're not using some of these digital tools, because if you don't, you're most likely not going to be able to access certain markets. And so I think we it's inevitable that we have to use such tools. It's just we as an organization, let's say AFCA, for example, coming to the table to have these conversations, our responsibility is going to be how do we do it in a way that protects the farmers, and in this case, more importantly, smallholder farmers, because, you know, slightly bigger companies that have the resources either can do this, have some variation, or want to build something, but it's always the smallholder farmers that are disadvantaged. And so our responsibility would be how do we become the voice for them, with them, so that it makes sure that, once again, upholds the dignity that they need to have. Thanks.
I love it. Thanks, Gilbert. Thank you, Janine. Thank you to all of you for this conversation today. I'd like to just suggest to you that this is the beginning, not the end. When you can start to think about clean data in places like this, you can start to deploy AI. You can start to deploy things that, frankly, are real limiting, you know, gate limiters in coffee, and especially from a farmer perspective. If you haven't seen Digital Greens Farmer Chat, you should check it out. It's digital extension for farmers in their own languages that is customized. We are moving towards a whole new day, and if you don't realize that, you got to open your eyes, because things are moving fast and these opportunities are here. And I think we all have the opportunity to shape them in a way that supports farmers and that doesn't reinforce the inequality of this industry. I just want to thank you all for the conversation and encourage you to support the work that folks like Janine are doing, because it only can really truly be sustainable if you buy our coffee and support those farmers. So thank you.